As I mentioned, over the last month or so, you've met two of the three Fogarty Literary Award finalists. So you might remember Georgia Tree told us about her memoir about her father's time in Fremantle Prison. That was probably, 4 to 6 weeks ago now. And Brooke Dunnell, we also had a chat with her, who told us about her winning manuscript, The Glass House. So this week, Molly decided to catch up with the third finalist in this award, and his name is Patrick Marlborough. A comedian, musician and freelance journalist working on a very interesting book indeed. It's called A Horse Held at Gunpoint. And here is the story behind the story.
Chapter 1, You're a Ghost. The first thing I decided to do as a ghost was stand on the railway tracks and let a train pass through me. I floated up from the water, where I'd landed with a plop. I looked down at the pylon that I'd struck my head on. There was a splatter of blood, like something out of a comic book. I could see my lifeless body bobbing beside it. It was then that I decided to stop looking down and start looking up. I had never believed in ghosts before this instant, but I could admit when I was wrong. I was living proof, so to speak. I'd been a ghost for 2 minutes at this point, unless the Fremantle bound train bearing down on me was running a few minutes late, as it sometimes did. I stepped in front of it. It felt like swallowing a doll's house. My name is Patrick Marlborough. I'm a writer and comedian and musician based in Wallyloop, Fremantle. And I work as a journalist and, satirist mainly, as much as I hate that phrase. And a comedian. And just generally bum around Fremantle. Spend a lot of time talking to people, hanging out in kebab shops and bookshops mainly these days. A Horse Held at Gunpoint is a screwball comedy about suicide and Fremantle and a host of other things, including grief, trauma, autism, anime, martial arts, revolution, and dogs.
So the book is made up of several interwoven narratives and perspectives. We've got a 7-year-old in a cowboy costume.
Yes.
Van and Esther shelling peanuts, a man called Marigold, and a ghost haunting the Frio line.
Yes.
What do these characters have in common? Who are they?
I guess the thing that binds them all is Fremantle itself and the kind of interwoven memories, jokes, and incidental dramas of living in a quite hectic community. All of them are definitely a little bit strange, and I guess reflections of my own eccentricities in their own way.
The book, as you say, is set in Frio, and Fremantle is almost a character in itself. Who is Fremantle to you?
Fremantle to me is a screaming, topless old guy running down the street telling you a story about something he saw at a footy match in 1979 while someone bears down on them in a $50,000 SUV. It's a town that's constantly in flux. It thrives on its own history while regurgitating it and choking on it at the same time. It's torn between gentrification and its working class past, immigration, and its yuppification. It's culture and an ever-growing number of NIMBYs who love to move to the town but then hate what it actually is. I've lived in Fremantle my entire life, as is my mother. My dad's a 10-pound pom. But, you know, it's a town that has always been an immigrant town. This town that, like any port town, is filled with movement constantly, whether that's the very literal movement of, like, ships and cranes, but also, like, constant construction and destruction are mass employment, mass unemployment. It's constantly at extremes. And I think at the moment it's having a bit of a downswing. It's a very strange, eccentric, and eclectic place.
But there's peace in this city, like there's peace in a hole in the ground.
I'm speaking with stand-up comedian and freelance journalist Patrick Marlborough. Their manuscript, A Horse Held at Gunpoint, was shortlisted for this year's Fogarty Award. I'm catching up with Patrick now to learn a bit more about the story. It's a novel about a ghost haunting the Fremantle line and the interesting characters who inhabit our port city. Who's the book dedicated to, Patrick?
Well, it's dedicated to the autistics of the world, I guess. People on the spectrum. And anybody else who is loosely affiliated with madness, I'm on the autism spectrum. I have bipolar and OCD and all that fun stuff. And I wanted to write a book that was for neurodivergent people and people who think differently and perhaps feel differently and whose mind especially works at a bit more of a rapid clip than the normal punter. And also to my my dog Buckley, because I'm terrified of him, and I thought if I didn't dedicate to him, he'd get me or something.
So. I noticed in the dedication you wrote, "May we never have to explain ourselves."
Yeah.
Is explaining yourself something you feel you have to do a lot as someone who is neurodiverse?
Yeah, it's you're constantly pressured into it by society, social gatherings. I think for me as a writer, we are compelled as writers to put our trauma and our diagnoses forth as content, which I definitely did. And you're both exploiting and being exploited by this system, because for a lot of us who can't make it in the industry by the traditional routes because of our diagnoses or whatever, we don't thrive in universities, we're not good networkers, we didn't go to private school. It's really your foot in the door, but you have to like sell a pound of flesh to get in. And then you can feel yourself bleeding out while you're trying to be the performing geek for people, while at the same time maintaining a level of normalcy for their part that keeps you from actually freaking them out. And so this book was very purposely meant to be a reflection of actual neurodiverse thought and comedy. And I wanted to give people a sense of what it's actually like, the pace and the hypomania and the, this isn't a word, but the referentiality, the kaleidoscope of things interconnecting and bouncing off each other like marbles and ping pong balls. I wanted people to read it and get it without having the usual rote system of like, this is this because I'm diagnosed with this. There are characters in the book who are not neurodiverse, and they are, I guess, some of the slower and more reflective characters. But for me, I wanted that to, yeah, not just be reflected in the content, but the form, definitely, and definitely the humor. Like, the book is, it is a screwball comedy. It is an action movie. It's an anime and a martial arts film. I didn't want it to be a thing about autistic characters who are thinking about their autism. I don't think the word is maybe used once in the entire book for a certain character, but these are not people talking about their diagnoses or reflecting on the trauma of it. These are people living lives totally outside it, but with it.
How do you feel that your neurodiversity did impact, I don't know, the process of writing a book? Like, for example, I heard that you wrote this whole manuscript, which is how many pages? 300 plus?
Yeah, it's 130,000 words. So it's 350-something pages, I think.
And you wrote this in 6 weeks?
Yeah, I wrote it in 6 weeks in the summer of 2020. What a year. I got back from New York, where I'd been living, and I sat down. And there was some prize, and I wrote it for that prize's deadline. I'm a person that needs a deadline or I won't work. And it was, you know, a lifetime of just wanting to be a novelist and nothing else, and avoiding it for all the usual reasons, and purposely breaking all of my usual habits, and just sitting down and going. You know, I was unemployed. I'm living with my parents, so I could just sit at the computer for like 14 hours a day and write.
Do you feel like you've faced particular challenges because you're a neurodiverse person going through the writing publication process?
Yeah, the industry side of the arts doesn't know what to do with neurodiverse people. They love the diverse part. I mean, I don't even like the phrase neurodiverse and neurodivergent. It makes me sound like a Blade Runner. But they want us there for representation, but they don't really know what to do with us. There is a big push at the moment in Australian fiction for quote-unquote neurodiverse authors. But what they want is neurodiversity for neurotypical people. So it's packaged and translated for the clinically normal. And that to me is an actual neurodiversity. That is massive compromise. There's this great overcautiousness and I guess cowardice at the moment, great conservatism that has settled in because funding is so tight. People are terrified to take any risks, and we're struck by this great sameness. That's why we have all these books about people returning home and small town murders and coastal towns and kind of upper middle class ennui autofiction, like all blurring together and all the same. Because when they ask you to put out any work, they say, "What is this work like?" But then how do you answer that if you're not neurotypical and people like you aren't getting their work put out anywhere because they're not like anybody else? You're never going to get in if you're racing against these guys.
So if you feel the publishing industry is wanting to reflect neurodiverse people, how can they support you if that's what they're wanting to do?
Money. I think it's patience for a lot of part. I think it's putting neurodiverse people in administrative and editorial roles, which is very rare. We're often artists in every medium I work with, but very rarely are we on the other side of the desk. And I think it's that willingness to come to us. See, the problem with explaining autism or bipolar or any kind of mental health thing or even trauma is that people want you to come to them, but no one ever takes a step towards us. And I think the industry and readers are able to and should be more willing to make the effort.
What do you hope readers take away from your book? I know, you know, obviously the goal is to get it published and be in people's hands.
Yeah.
What do you hope they take away from it?
I hope they fall in love with the characters, as strange as that might sound. It's a character-driven book. You know, it's meant to read like an episode of The Simpsons meets James Joyce, but at the same time, it's meant to be a fun ride, and I want it to be the kind of book that people give to a weird friend and be like, hey, this reminds me of you. That's kind of what I'm after. If there's some strange 12-year-old bordering on the spectrum kid out there and he gets handed that book and they love it, that'd be great. I desperately want to get this book published. I got a lot more books in me, so once this one gets out, I'm really keen to get all the others out.
But there's peace in this city, like there's peace in a hole in the ground.
That was Molly Schmidt speaking with writer and comedian Patrick Marlborough there. You can keep up to date with Patrick's stand-up events and the process, of course, of his book or books at patrickmarlborough.com.